This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor speaking to Admiral Gary Ruffhead, United States Navy retired, and Professor Joe Felter, both at the Hoover Institution, writing a Strategica about the possibility of an armed conflict in Taiwan, around Taiwan, by the People's Republic of China. And both have written essays from their points of view, from their experience. And I begin again with the diplomacy of this matter. Joe, the attack on Taiwan, what it looks like, includes the possibility of cyber attack. The admiral has mentioned this in his essay. We see now the difficulty of two major powers, nuclear armed powers, the United States and Russia, to deal with cyber threats, cyber espionage, cyber sabotage, cyber attacks, because the origins are always vague to the public, and because what is to be done? What is an adequate response? We know from anecdote that China is routinely attacking Taiwan, tries to get through the defenses all the time. They've recently had some successes, I believe. China also had some successes in Korea, in South Korea. Is there any adequate answer for the continued cyber threat by the People's Republic of China? Is this something Taiwan needs to work on to respond in some fashion that makes the mainland pay a price for its gamesmanship?
Well, John, absolutely. I mean, not just Taiwan, you know, that China's attacking the United States, it's attacking so many countries. I mean, it absolutely is leveraging cyber in the cyber domain, very aggressively, and we could expect to see that continue. So absolutely, back to my thesis about self-help, you mentioned it is hard to defend against these attacks, but we need to make these investments. These are what we might call, maybe the non-traditional investments. And again, there's an inertia, not just in Taiwan, but in, certainly the United States, about employing the types of weapon systems and investing in the types of defenses that kind of we're comfortable with, the ones that kind of helped us win wars of the last century. But now and going forward, it's cyber, it's space, it's different domains of conflict that we're going to have to fight and defend. And so cyber is a great example. China can They've demonstrated their ability to inflict serious damage, not just like in a war, but to think about their economic damage they inflict, using cyber methods. So Taiwan's at risk from Chinese attack. China will use its cyber capabilities. Its capabilities are increasing, and it's certainly something that we need to help, and Taiwan needs to help themselves defend against.
Is there an adequate conversation, Joe, to your reading of what is the correct response to a cyber attack, cyber espionage? What is a price that you can make a state pay so that it stops its bad acting?
John, that's a challenge that we are wrestling with in real time, certainly in the United States. It's you mentioned the challenge of attribution. So it is a very difficult response to develop. And it lends itself to a lot of opportunities for even non-state actors to maybe conduct an attack and make it look like it's from a state. So it's because of all the challenge of attribution and so many other factors, how to respond is difficult. And that's something we are grappling with now. But it's incredibly important that Taiwan does respond and does defend and does develop some resiliency to these types of attacks.
The State Department thinks about Taiwan, but so does the Defense Department. And Admiral, you write of something that I ask you to define. What is the say-do gap at the Pentagon when it comes to Taiwan in particular?
Well, I think, that's a coin that when Secretary Lloyd Austin coined it, I just thought it really captured things very, very nicely. And what it means is we are quick to say what we could do, but then in order to have the things in place to do it takes a long time. And I think that one of the things, particularly when we talk about Taiwan, a lot of articles are replete with what the U.S. could do, but then getting to that point where we have the systems, the matter that Joe was just talking about, where we have the decision mechanisms and structures in place to respond to cyber attacks, for example, across defense and non-defense systems. We keep talking about how important it is that we do that, and that we have the ability to do it, but getting there is another thing. And I really applaud Secretary Austin for putting that on the table and really making that something to work toward. I think that one of the things I try to point out in my paper is, you know, where are we today? What are the realities today? And what should we be thinking about so that we can develop a better agenda, not just to prepare ourselves for activities in East Asia, because it's more than just Taiwan. It's the South China Sea. It's the East China Sea and our ally Japan. You know, our ability to reinforce, and I highlight the what I would call the sad state of our ability to use sea lift to reinforce forces and to be able to provide the material that would be needed in the Western Pacific. We've got to start working on those.
You also observe, Admiral, to suggest that Taiwan has not done what is necessary, given its technological superiority on the planet for manufacturing high-end chips, that you ask for Taiwan to take responsibility for keeping its lights on and something called an integrated conflict battle management system. Is that not now in place? Is Taiwan
no, I would say
depending
that I would
on us?
Say, yeah, no. One of the reasons why I wanted to introduce that is that there's a lot of thought and attention and money that goes into doing battle management. In other words, how military forces are commanded and controlled. But I think that we're moving into a world, and I think Taiwan is really an example of that, where attacks on power grids, attacks on financial systems, attacks on transportation systems, and military activity, we need to have a more integrated view of what's happening throughout the entire society. Because I think those are the types of levers that we are going to have to deal with. And I would submit that it's not just about China, it's about Russia, it's about Iran, it's about North Korea. And we really need to think in terms of a broader national defense that incorporates an integrated way of sensing, assessing, and then deciding. And I think Taiwan is a great place to start with that.
Joe, I come to you because the puzzle here is I've heard it anecdotally said that Taiwan is depending on others to show up and help. And of course, your method, your methodology talking about self-help answers that. But then again, we come to the question of Taiwan not investing in adequate preparation for the event that China's going to use asymmetrical warfare or use non-kinetic warfare, such as cyber, such as financial institutions, such as the game playing that can go on in fintech. You understand all that. Can we ask Taiwan to do more, visibly do more, and talk about it, than playing the victim and asking for help?
You know, John, we can, but at the end of the day, Taiwan has to decide that it wants to do more. I think that the incentive should be there for them to invest more in their own defense and in the types of asymmetric defenses that are really going to help them, you know, leverage their defenders' advantages, if you will. You know, they have an overall defense concept, ODC, which is pretty encouraging, you know, their strategy to defend against the Chinese invasion. So they've got a strategy, I think, that does leverage its defensive advantages. But again, they have to want to do it. They have to make their own investments. You know, this is a country that doesn't, you know, you look at Israel, look at other countries that have an enemy very nearby or potential enemy. They have conscription and all their men and sometimes women serve for years. You know, Taiwan should have a similar role where they have a territorial defense force, you know, made up of where like in some other countries, you get drafted and you stay in for a while. So there's a lot more Taiwan can do to help defend itself. And going back to that term of self-help. So we can say whatever we want, but at the end of the day, Taiwan needs to act in their own interest. And you know, there's a lot more they can do to build their defensive capabilities and prevent China from recalculating that it can successfully annex it.
To the kinetic elements, Admiral, you write about the U.S. military presence, the Navy, in the Indo-Pacific, the formation of the Quad, India, mm-hmm. Australia, Japan, and the United States. Taiwan is not part of the Quad, but certainly it would look upon the Quad as a backup. Is that already in place? I've watched this talk for some time, that say-do gap you talked about, and I'm not at all sure that the Quad is integrated with Taiwan or that Taiwan is looking to take its part in this thinking about China's aggression.
No, it's not. And I would be very cautious in that regard, John, because I think the Quad looks at the broader Indo-Pacific and the security issues, the economic issues. I think, you know, one of the first things that came out of the Quad leaders meeting, which was the first leadership meeting that President Biden had, was really to address COVID issues. And so I think as you look at the countries in the Quad, that Taiwan is you know, the Quad is not a defense alliance in the way that we normally think about it. But I do believe that countries are beginning to pay more attention to what's happening in Taiwan. I highlighted earlier Japan being a bit more forward in articulating exactly how important Taiwan is to its security interests. But I think that what really needs to happen is that Taiwan begins to close its say-do gap. You know, as Joe mentioned, they have the defense concept, but now they really need to start moving down that road. And it's very easy for us to say, we'll go, you know, they should go do that. But there are funding issues, there are inertial issues, there are force design issues. And as I mentioned earlier, they have to take into account their demographic because they need to design a military where the population is going to be much smaller in the future. They need to design a security structure that maybe everyone is not in uniform, particularly those who are involved in cyber defense. And so those are some of the things that I think need to be put on the table. And I hope that, you know, Joe and I put forth in our pieces can stimulate some of that thinking.
I'm speaking to Admiral Gary Ruffhead, United States Navy retired, and Professor Joe Felter, both at the Hoover Institution, writing at Strategica about Taiwan. A day, a month, a year, a history we hope never comes, but wishing is not a policy nor a program. So we're looking at the details of what Taiwan needs to do. When we come back, I'm going to ask the Admiral about the United States Navy, which he identifies in his piece correctly as the first mover. What is the Navy's preparation for this? And we'll include Japan as well. And this also includes the professor to comment on the diplomacy. As the Admiral mentioned earlier, Japan has made remarks, the foreign minister has made remarks that point to the fact that Japan understands why Taiwan's defense is important, not only to the globe, but also to Japan. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.